You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I saw something that Nick Wright tweeted out that I had not seen before. And as I see what it is happening in Boston, where a lot of draft picks that were going to bring other players to the Celtics, one of our most historic franchises, as they compete again with the Lakers for championships and have fallen behind with Danny Ainge, were some quotes I had not seen from Danny Ainge before, saying the last people on earth that he would ask their opinions, their political views, would be NBA players. And he said, furthermore, there's not many players that I care what they have to think, what they have to say. And I was surprised to hear a general manager say that. And this age of player empowerment that has been fascinating to watch over the last decade, birthing this troll team in Brooklyn, that the Knicks wish that they had that. I understand you could love the lovable underdog, but you want a team that looks and feels that kind of excellent, that kind of star power.
We wanted Durant. Yeah, of course. Who wouldn't want that?
But all of it, they're the envy of it. Even though they're trolls and they're unlikable and they're the last thing belched by the player empowerment machine of three guys just saying, bleep it, we're going to get together and we're going to upset this entire power structure in a way that upsets our customers and the people who want to believe in hope and teamwork and everything else. This is what it's birthed. And Danny Ainge is telling you, after what just happened in the last year, that the guys he wants to hear from are Popovich and Kerr, that he doesn't have any interest in listening to what his players have to say on political views. And it made me think of what the New Yorker just did in quoting an anonymous GM saying this player empowerment is the single worst thing to happen in the history of sports. And at least in part, because that guy has had his power reduced and that's how he's viewing it. That general manager realizes, oh, wait a minute. It's what I've been telling you for a while, Stu Gutz. For as much as we'd like to believe in management and stuff, LeBron for the last 10 years after practices should have had Ty Lue and Eric Spoelstra running suicides for him.
Right.
Like, he's been running this thing for the last 10 years. And now the power doesn't like it so much when the players can just get together. And then Blake wants to be like, no, you can't recruit me. Blake Griffin's like, I want to play there. And LaMarcus Aldridge says, never mind. I don't care about your general manager recruiting sway. I want to play there. And they keep going there. And you're like, well, how many players are they going to get over there? Everybody wants to play there. And it's distorted the whole thing in a way that makes me curious what you think specifically of Danny Ainge not thinking this, which is one thing, but voicing it. Like, what does he have to gain from telling his players he has no respect for anything that they have to say about anything in their America?
Yeah, the funny thing, Dan, those are two wildly different conversations. One, the anonymous GM is just talking about player empowerment and their ability to dictate their careers. And the other is talking about off the court, away from the game type content. The funny thing about Danny Ainge saying that is on his team, he has probably one of the most mature intelligent voices in terms of a player in Jaylen Brown. This is a guy who's very active, very involved, a well-learned, well-read guy who is in the mix, taking these things seriously, not as opinions off the cuff, but really doing the work of understanding and talking to people and doing the reading and stuff. So it's funny that Danny Ainge would say that. In general, I understand, I guess, a little bit what he's saying. And how many 20-some-year-olds do you listen to when it comes to politics? A lot of times they're not very sophisticated or very developed or evolved opinions. A lot of times it's very basic or entry level. But again, I would say Jaylen Brown doesn't fit that mold, and he plays for the Celtics. And so, Dan, I'm absolutely with you. What do you gain from saying that on the record? What positive do you get out of that? To me, all you get is a downside from expressing something like that.
You're trying to attract players. You're trying to get players to come to your team, to come to your organization, to come to your city. They're already skeptical because of all the stories they've heard about the fans, and now you get a GM who doesn't want to hear from him. I don't know why he would voice that publicly. It's weird.
It's almost shocking that any NBA general manager, let alone a white guy, would say that, because it's so self-defeating. It almost sounds like something that he was overheard saying privately and never meant to become public. And now it's a scandal.
No, that's not what happened. He was just sitting in a chair talking to somebody who was interviewing him.
No, I get that.
And it's not, I don't think it's something that is all that recent from what I gather, because Nick Wright had just come upon it and he was sharing it. And I was surprised that I hadn't seen it, just because it didn't make any sense to me for Danny Ainge to voice the opinion. Why would you voice the opinion? I don't care what the people who work for me think about anything about what's happening to them. The ones I respect on what's happening in Black America is Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich. But that might be about youth, but Danny Ainge was a white Celtic in that city, with everything that's happened to Kyrie Irving in that city. And Danny Ainge gives voice to, the Black experience. I mean, you can read through that. The Black experience, I'm not interested in what too many players have to say about anything, because politics and race are now so fused that you can't even separate them. They're practically synonyms right now, the way people talk about them.
I mean, he's just saying the quiet part out loud. This is the way management thinks about labor in, your local Amazon warehouse or anywhere else in corporate America. I think we all probably knew he thought it. He just said it out loud, so it's not really a surprise to me. It's a bad look, but it's just not.
But there's no upside to say. There's nothing. There's only downside to him saying it. And so when your job is to attract free agents and players and want them to come to your city and your organization, why would you say that?
But is it worth noting at all that he said this in 2019 rather than now?
Yeah, that's part of it, of course.
That's definitely worth noting, and it definitely puts a different light on it. But I would still say Jaylen Brown was on that team in 2019, and he is, as I said, of one of the kind of more developed voices in this area when it comes to talking about things that go beyond the game.
To me, I link it, and I don't know if I articulated well enough what it is that I was having stimulated earlier in terms of my curiosities as it regards the specifics of what just happened with Naomi Osaka. It was, I thought, something that was really in your face. The way that she tried to change the rules in that symbolic, rigid sport where they ask you to stay within the lines and the entire system fell on her neck. You will be fined. You will be punished. Mental illness or not, we will kick you out of this tournament. And she's got to pack up her things and say, well, I tried. And whether she was flippant or handled it with grace or the way that you want her to or not, the system fell on her neck. We will protect the way this is done. You will answer questions because there's so much money around this. To see her fight for her individual brand power in an individual sport, coming through the last 10 years of what you've seen in basketball and the last year of what you've seen in America, and what you know about young people and just the distortions of social media and these addictions and how much pressure. Stu Gatz, we were talking about it before, and I saw an article this weekend. Rod Benson wrote it in San Francisco, a random athlete, about how under-discussed it is that the mental health of athletes is such a strain because of the transition after their career, how difficult it is to lose your identity in your 30s and not know what you're going to do with the rest of your life, and the specifics of mental health being something that's only linked to your performance. that mental health, it requires so much mental health to be Serena Williams in that sport. Think about it, okay? To be Serena Williams, to come after every challenger, to go through childbirth, to try and stay at the top of that game at 37 after you've been disparaged your entire career under the weight of that system, that country club that came down to bear on her father in Compton because they didn't like that Serena and Venus and Richard were swaggering in with signs and desecrating their country club, the short skirts, in an area where the women have always led on when it comes to gender and sexuality.
But that's part of the problem where people just assume they have the mental strength. You just said the mental strength it takes to get through all that, to do all that, to accomplish what she accomplished. So Sasha went through some of the same stuff, though.
She doesn't, though. She's telling you that she's showing you, do you know how hard it is to be Serena Williams? Look at what she did for 15 years.
Yes.
I'm having trouble with it for 15 minutes.
The problem, Dan, is that I like what Howard said earlier. If she felt incapable of reaching the standards required, then she should have just pulled out. The part where you try to a la carte it, well, like, I like these parts, but I don't like these parts. That's what complicates it. I'm not questioning her sincerity, but I'm saying from an organizer standpoint, that's the part that complicates it. The example I gave, now, by the way, the flip side is the rebuttal of not only we're going to fine you, but we're going to ban you from all the four majors. That's overkill. You have penalties for certain things. You missed media availability. Here's the fine. Just got to stick to that. The example I gave on the radio yesterday was the NBA has a rookie transition program, right? Every player coming to the NBA in this year, first year, doesn't matter if you're 32 years old and you just played 8 years in Europe, you have to go through rookie transition program. If you skip it, the penalty is they fine you and you got to come back next year and do it again. So urban legend has it, Allen Iverson missed it, got fined, and they said you got to come back next year. So he said, what if I don't come back next year? He said, well, we'll fine you again and then you got to come back the year after that. So Allen Iverson allegedly handed them a blank check and said, fill it out when I'm retired. And the NBA were like, okay, because that's what you do. There's a clear penalty. To try to escalate it and make it worse from something that isn't that big of a deal at that point only brought a negative light to the tournaments and made her a more sympathetic character when in reality there were things about her approach, as we've talked about today, that probably could have been done better.
But what does it say about the entire sport that their young star, Naomi Osaka, is more comfortable going to social media, the internet, a known cesspool, than having a behind-the-scenes one-on-one conversation with the governing body of the sport? I think it speaks volumes about the comfort level there between her and these people, and she probably didn't feel like she had the leverage to speak to them one-on-one.
She said she tried. She said she was trying to discuss this. I don't know what's true about that and what's not, but the way that I was reading all that suggested to me that she needs help with the mental health stuff. She went to them with the need for help. It wasn't social media first and then, not the way that I understood it. I understood it as she tried to do this more quietly and she wasn't trying to make this particular mess.
No, but with social media, you control the message, what it is you're saying. You know, you sit up there at a press conference, you cannot control what you're asked.
But
you know?
I'm saying that she tried to link the two things. Right. From my understanding on the reporting is she tried to explain to them some form of, I can't do media interviews, it causes me great anxiety. And then the response is some form of, we can't set this precedent for just you, the customer and the media, as part of all of our contractual and sponsor obligations. This is part of your job. This is part of being a professional. You are an individual. In the unionized sports that are team sports, Kyrie Irving can't stop talking to the media. It's not allowed. They're partners. We're all in business together, and it is part of the contract of being a professional in your workspace. But to be 23, when you talk about, honest to God, you talk about rookie training, I mean, to be as good as this woman is at 23 means that she came up through a pipeline over the last 10 years that will absolutely atrophy your youth or your professionalism or your experiences. That world is crazy in terms of how it devours its young. So when she tells you at 23, raises her hand, I wasn't ready for this, I didn't know all this came with it, and your response is, you have to be more professional, Osaka. You have to treat this as a professional who's an adult in a world of grown-ups. I'm looking at you and I'm saying, man, what she came through that devours its young at 23, you're still pretty damn young in terms of being an adult who's learned things. Hell, Danny Ainge just told you he doesn't want to hear the opinion of 23-year-olds on anything.
I know you hate this, but some people take it to the most basic level. Hey, give me $55 million, sign me up for a press conference after their match. I know you hate that, but that's how people look at these things. They do.
The rule is you have to show up. You don't have to be willing. You don't have to be verbose. You can answer every tennis question with a one-word answer if you choose, and then spend 5 minutes on a soapbox talking about mental health. I'm just saying there are other ways. There was a compromise here where she could fulfill her obligation and seize it to talk about mental health, tennis.
For me, the interesting bit of this is everything about sports is taxing on mental health, right? You mentioned like the rise through that, the competition itself, the playing in front of fans, the press conference, the whole construct is centered around making it very difficult on mental health. And so like it is one of those things where, okay, the press conference is a problem, but the whole thing causes a problem. So in some ways, if you want to opt out of, you know, sports causing you mental health or mental health issues, you kind of have to opt out of all of it because the whole thing is almost designed to test every bit of your mental strength.
But don't you think fans see that and the press see that? Hey, she has enough mental strength where she can go out, you know, center court, U.S. Open, play in front of 80,000 people, win the match, win the Open. Therefore, she should be able to handle a press conference. It's ludicrous to for me as to why people can't understand they're two totally separate things. She's comfortable on the court in that environment. She is not comfortable asking questions when she doesn't know what's coming.
First of all, Woody, that's an excellent point. The whole profession is an exercise in mental stress, right? The idea that most of us go to work, like us, we came here, we did a show, you went to work, you filed taxes, whatever you do for a job, a regular job, there are most of your days are just kind of middle-of-the-road days. For an athlete, did we win or did we lose? Everything is in terms of results and immediate feedback. Second of all, and this is particular to her and to her profession, I talk to my good friend Prim Sripapat all the time about this. She's a former pro tennis player. She's a former ESPN SportsCenter anchor, and she's getting her PhD in psychology, and she really deep dives into these kind of conversations. And part of the crazy thing about being a tennis player, and Prim came up through the pipeline, was there with Capriati and all the greats down at IMG, is there's part of it where you have this camaraderie with these people that you're around and you're coming up with, and also intense competition. I'm trying to kill you. I'm trying to get over on you. And that's the difference between that and a team sport, where at least there's some measure of I can lean on teammates on these things. I can lean on support of others, particularly unionized team sports. Tennis doesn't have a union, and tennis doesn't have teams. So you are incredibly alone through a lot of these experiences, and that's got to be incredibly stressful to her. Having said that, if it's that stressful, just pull out. Just say, hey, I can't do this. Much like if your knee was messed up, you would pull out. You wouldn't say, well, I'm going to try hobble through it and skip some of these things and do some of these other things.
But people power through injuries all the time and sometimes even win tournaments despite fighting through injuries. Sugat said something a couple of minutes ago that I wanted to clean up, and just labeling her okay while she's between the lines but not okay when she's doing media. No, she's probably not okay often, and she's just looking for sweet relief. And if the sport is serious about growing, they should be more worried about one of their stars' just general health and how they can incentivize media hits as opposed to what it is right now, which is we're going to penalize you if you don't show up for it. It's a mental health hurdle that she has to climb just to be out there. So if she's looking for sweet relief, why not provide it?
I was making the point that people see her out on the court performing the way she performs and assume that she could do the press. Yeah. Right.
I appreciate you giving a voice, right, because it's a massive mistake. Because mental health is one of those things that people overcome daily. There's plenty of people that do their jobs well while they're in the teeth of it.
But Mike, you and I love tennis, and this is the one sport, because we've talked about super leagues a lot. I don't care about the French Open if she's out. I don't. You take Serena out, and I definitely don't care. Like, there are five tennis players I care about right now, and if they played each other every single weekend, I'd care about that more than I would about the U.S. Open. I would.
let me for an instant be the bad guy on this. And here's the other reason why the
Stugatz, every time we're having any conversation, he just wants to make a Super League. Like, it doesn't matter.
There has to be one.
It can be a mental health conversation. It doesn't matter. He just, wherever he is in the world, he just wants to create a Super League.
Think about this. It's Djokovic. It's Nadal.
I don't want to think about
it. It's Federer.
Enough about
they play
for all
every
of us.
Weekend, okay. And the winner has
that's
to beat Isner
we'll have
twice.
That conversation I mean, another time.
Yeah, like, twice? Isner twice?
Yeah, they do those exhibitions all just the time.
Every time, every where conversation they do it. Leads it to a super team with Stugatz. It doesn't matter where you are in the world.
It's so stupid. So the idea here to be the bad guy is that if we were to make allowances for Naomi Osaka to skip out on this thing, it opens the flood doors for everybody who doesn't feel like talking to the media today to then skip out. Because,
but that's why they did what they did. They cannot set the precedent for anybody. You're bigger than our rules.
It's not even bigger than our rules. To me, it goes beyond that. It goes to something that I can't disprove. I can't disprove you're having mental health issues today. So I just have to take your word for it. But then that opens a loophole that can be abused. I think of people who travel with the animals, support animals, right? Once upon a time, it used to be seeing eye dog. That was it. Everybody else had to be in a crate. Then the emotional support animals started. And there were people who legitimately needed them.
Earlier in the show, I put Greg Cody on a flight with a boa constrictor as his support animal.
Right.
Yeah, because that is the analogy.
Right.
That you can't allow that to keep moving because the mental health issues are there every single day. And very soon, nobody will be giving interviews because why would anybody want to do that? Like, why would anybody want to sit there and have some French guy yell at him about how shitty they are on clay? Like, nobody wants to sit there and do that.
Super League, you make your own rules, Dano.
Hey, in the words of Vince Vaughn in the movie The Breakup, which you can listen to an episode reviewing it on Cinephobe, the podcast where Zach Harper and I review movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain were they accurately poorly rated or maybe they didn't get a fair shake.
And you mentioned The Breakup. That's what Chelsea Football Club had to do with club legend Frank Lampard mid-season before Thomas Tuchel took the reins and then absolutely dominated the competition in the UEFA Champions League.
And since we're talking tennis, Marty Fish is going to join me, former seventh best tennis player in the world. He will join me today on Stupidity to talk about Osaka and a golf tournament that me and Chris are going to play in with him. How about that?
I mean, whoa. Wait a second. Chris, happened? You're giving Chris a buy-in to this. Man, there's a lot there.
And Mike, by the way, thanks again for appearing on this week's episode of the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody. Really appreciate it. Fun stuff. Really revealing. Just probably the best podcast we've done.
Greg Cody mentioned on the Greg Cody Show that if he could pick anyone from the shipping container to be his daughter, it would be me. And we discussed that last week on Mystery Crate.
There
Check
you
it
go.
Out on the Levitard and Friends
All right.
Podcast
really,
Network.
Really pissed off you didn't pick me as your daughter.
All right.
Well, you know, what can I tell you? I've never had a daughter, so I wanted to experience it. Now I'm a girl dad. What can I tell you?
Be careful what you wish for.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I got two.
All right, everybody, Mother's Day is officially around the corner. If mom's gift isn't already on the way, you've got hours, maybe even minutes, to get it together. So head over to 1-800-Flowers.com right this second. 1-800-Flowers still has great last-minute deals on handmade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts ordered easily and delivered fresh. You want to get mom something that shows your appreciation for all that she's done? We know you've been a knucklehead. She knows you've been a knucklehead. Please do better. Help your mom feel appreciated this Mother's Day. This is your last chance to lock in these Mother's Day deals. Only good while supplies last. Order today at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan, D-A-N. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.